From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Sunnyvale, South Bay.
I live in Oakland, California.
Concord. Parkside.
San Mateo.
I live in Alameda.
Marina.
Currently living in the Mission District.
Coming up, we'll hear how people cope with the experience of being homeless.
I mean, you have to kind of block stuff out and just sort of be a very accepting kind of person. And that becomes second nature to a lot of people.
Then we'll hear why one woman helped launch a newspaper where the reporters were homeless.
Their voices couldn't be heard. They couldn't speak. They were a sub-city of silent people.
And how one man made a home inside a Tenderloin neighborhood residential hotel.
It's been a long time since I've had interactions with other people that aren't trying to steal my backpack.
Stories from the streets. Today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, news organizations all over the Bay Area have decided to come together to focus on an issue that's too easy to ignore, homelessness. It's continuing a similar effort that began back in June. Today, we want it to dominate the conversation on every radio station, website, and paper. We want to start by introducing you to an extensive, ongoing UCSF study about the experience of homelessness among adults over 50. It's called The Health Outcomes of People Experiencing Homelessness in Older Middle Age, or HOPE Home. The study's been watching how 350 older adults move into and out of homelessness, how they do or don't manage to find housing again, and how living on the street affects the body and mind. The aim is to use the data to help guide prevention, healthcare, social service, and housing interventions. The research is taking place in Oakland, so KALW's housing and homelessness reporter Liza Veal went there to find out what the researchers have been learning, now going into year 4 of the study.
The research for UCSF's HOPE Home study consists of open-ended interviews and clinical evaluations of mental and physical health. Research director Dr. Margot Kuschel says because it's a long-term study, participants' voices actually help shape the lines of inquiry.
We have wound up adding things and thinking of things very differently from the stories that our participants tell us, and the solutions that they have to solve things make a lot of sense.
Some participants are newly homeless, displaced by the rising rents in Oakland. And some have been in and out of homelessness since childhood, like Kim Coleman, who left the projects in New York as a teenager.
We hung out in the tunnels, in the train tunnels. I guess at the time I thought it was fun. You know what I mean? But when you look back at it, it was ridiculous. It's insane. I just didn't want to go home.
Some participants are cycling in and out of homelessness, and some fall fast and deep into it, like Maria Haverstock, who left her abusive husband and her home about 15 years ago.
The single strongest thing I remember, okay, about homelessness is how quickly you can go from renting a place, owning a car, having a job, and something catastrophic happens to you where all of a sudden you are not, there is no safety net.
Maria says she lost some sense of her place in the world when she began living on the streets.
One of the things that was the worst for me being homeless was the way people looked at you. I mean, because I have a college education, grew up in San Francisco, practiced as an architect in San Francisco for over 30 years.
Shame and despair are common among the participants in the study. So are stress, fear, and anxiety.
It's not safe. I mean, the worst, those types of memories for me would be times when I was threatened. You know, we had a guy pull a gun on us once.
When you sleep on the street, you're exposed to danger. That's why many of the study participants try to sleep during the day or in shifts. Dr. Kuschel says sleep deprivation can exacerbate all kinds of mental health problems.
Homelessness is pretty much like bizarro world. It's like to take everything that a mental health professional, for instance, might recommend and turning it on its head. You know, you take people, you put them in a situation where they're under incredible stress, where they're afraid, where they get little sleep, where they're isolated from their friends and family, where they're stigmatized, where people look down on them, where they feel shame, where they don't have access to good food, where they don't have access to their medical care. I mean, really everything about homelessness is almost set up to worsen people's mental health problems.
That's why, contrary to a lot of popular assumptions, mental health problems are often a consequence, not a cause of homelessness. Kushal says she gets frustrated with the way she sees people conflating mental illness with homelessness.
Clearly, people with mental health problems are at higher risk because, in a way, mental health problems, there's a lot of stigma and discrimination against people with mental health problems. It's harder to get jobs. All of those things are true. But I think we need to keep it in context that people who are wealthy and have mental health problems don't necessarily become homeless. It really is, it's like an added risk factor, but it's not the only story.
Depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, behavioral disorders, and cognitive impairment are all more common among the Hope Home participants than the general population. But Kushal says each of these symptoms only shows up in less than half of the people in the study. That suggests that people do find ways to cope. Maria Haverstock says part of her coping strategy was forgetting.
I mean, you have to kind of block stuff out and just sort of be a very accepting kind of person. And that becomes second nature to a lot of people. You know, they forget actually what it's like, I think, to have a house, to have a place where you can go in and sleep, where you have your own bathroom, where you can take a shower whenever you want.
Maria says when she was on the street, she didn't want to think about what she'd lost. She welcomed distraction.
Something would happen, right, that you would think was funny. My direction was always to kind of go towards more something that was positive than kind of get stuck in thinking negative stuff. So I appreciated different things that even being homeless really can't take away from you.
She says the relationships that she formed while she was homeless have lasted, including the partner she's still with today.
I don't know how to describe to somebody what it's like. I mean, you form kind of a camaraderie with other people who are in that position.
Kim also notes the way he and other people on the street took care of each other.
See, a person has business to take care of, right, with social services or with SSI or, you know, school or whatever. And they're intimidated by the situation that they're in. You know, they may come and ask me about it, and we'll talk about it, and I've even gone to places with the people, you know, so I enjoy doing that.
That's why he's now going to school to become a counselor. He says he wants to give back to people that are in the same place he was.
Some people are poverty-stricken. I mean, they don't make enough money, so they're out on the street. But it might not have anything to do with drugs or a mental illness. It's just poverty. It's just what is.
After 50 years in and out of homelessness, he's seen people on the street slide into mental illness. But as for him,
I haven't gotten to that part yet. I haven't went there yet. Yeah. I'm the same person. I'm me. Yeah. You know, and I know what I've done. I know what I can do.
Research director Margot Kushal says people tend to emphasize their own choices when telling their stories.
I think what is really clear to us, having now followed these incredible 350 people for a couple of years, a couple things. One is how much the individuals tend to blame themselves when we listen to the larger narrative and think, God, the world was really stacked against them in a bad way. But I think we also really have found incredible examples and tales of people's resilience.
Since the study began, about half the participants have found housing. Half of those have done it without formal assistance. Still, nationally, about 20% of people who fall into homelessness go on to be unsheltered for over a year. And unfortunately, Kushal says that number is creeping up. More and more people are becoming locked into chronic homelessness. For Cross Currents, I'm Liza Veal.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanaut Baba. If you spend time walking around the East Bay, you may have seen a homeless person selling newspapers. That's Street Spirit, a monthly paper launched 21 years ago. It raises awareness about economic justice and humanizes the experience of homelessness. The reporters are homeless, the vendors are homeless. But this past July, the Quaker group that supported the project, American Friends Service Committee, announced they're cutting their funding. Homeless vendors like Donald Sistrunk count on the paper as a source of income.
We need to keep this paper alive, you know, because it really helps the community, and a lot of people are very much interested in this paper.
But that's not the end of the story. Last September, another organization, Youth Spirit Artworks, announced it will take over supporting the paper. Sally Hindman co-founded Street Spirit in 1995, and today she's executive director of Youth Spirit Artworks. She joined me in studio to talk about the future of the paper and why it's worth saving. I want to hear the story of the founding of Street Spirit.
Okay. I mean, there are any number of versions of that, depending on, you know, who you talk to and the context. Mm-hmm. Terry had been working in Oakland with the struggles following the earthquake. And the times were such that there were many, many people, homeless people that had been displaced. I was working in Oakland with homeless people doing art. And we saw that there were homeless people that were selling at the time the Oakland Tribune. The Oakland Tribune was a Republican paper. It was a very conservative, reactionary newspaper. And the point of view that was being expressed about homeless people through the paper was very reactionary and anti-homeless.
What are some of the stories or headlines that we could expect?
You know, blaming homeless people for being in poverty, blaming people for needing public assistance, blaming people for joblessness, you know, blaming people for not being able to pay rent when, you know, GA was not nearly what it needed to be able to support people even then. We were disgusted by the fact that there wasn't a means for homeless people to be able to make extra income or any income at all, and that there really needed to be more job opportunities for homeless people. And, you know, street papers were starting around the country. So, you know, I decided, let's start an East Bay homeless newspaper. Let's do it.
So in terms of the paper, what would then a paper for homelessness do?
One of the things that we were the most disgusted by back then, back in 1995, was the fact that the voices of homeless and people on the margins were not being heard. Their voices couldn't be heard. They couldn't speak. They were a subsidy of silent people. And I find that to be one of the most sickening, disgusting, anger-provoking things about, you know, the injustice of poverty, that the people are voiceless. In order to fight for justice and have a voice, you know, you've got to have a means for making your voice heard. So the paper's been, for all these years, really a means for homeless people and people on the margins to really have an outlet to be able to express their voices through writing and poetry and spoken word and all the different ways that the paper serves as that.
And then over the years, what have you seen has been the effect on the homeless people who are involved in Street Spirit? Like, what have you seen?
Well, I mean, there are 100 vendors at any given time that are selling the paper and making an income. So, you know, it's their livelihood. It's what keeps them off the street. It's what keeps them going. So that's, you know, one really important thing. But I think that the vendors feel very proud of the paper and proud of the articles in the paper, proud of the way that it says things that they have ownership of.
So since you mentioned the vendors, we sent out our reporter, Claire Strempel,
great,
to talk to some vendors.
Great.
So let's take a listen. Here's what some of them had to say.
Just keep coming and seeing us and getting it. There's good articles. There's beautiful poetry in it and great art. And we'll try and keep it out here as best as we can.
I have a lot of great experience from being out here. I've met with a lot of good people out here, you know, and they've always, this is what keeps me going, is the good people. Power to the people.
Everybody that sells the Street Spirit newspaper are not bums.
Those were the voices of Jocelyn Patrice Mays, Angel Mason, and Donald Sistrunk, all vendors of the Street Spirit newspaper, and I'm speaking with Sally Heineman, Executive Director of Youth Spirit Artworks, co-founder of Street Spirit Newspaper. We know that Street Spirit lost its funding. How will Youth Spirit Artworks fund the paper now that it's coming back?
You know, I think that there's a really exciting story about the process that the paper has gone through and the process that Youth Spirit Artworks has gone through in taking on the paper. Consensus was reached that this was what we wanted to do, that Youth Spirit Artworks could take on the paper as a project of our organization and really inject youth leadership into this paper as a really exciting way to go forward into the future.
What do the youth you work with want to talk about? What's on their minds?
I mean, they, you know, our youth are really concerned about displacement of longtime residents from South Berkeley and their own prospects of being able to stay in the communities that their families have been in for many years. So gentrification and displacement is a major concern of theirs. They're also really involved in the Black Lives Matter struggle. I know a number of our youth have been concerned about the situation at Standing Rock. So, you know, these are the kinds of concerns that they're going to bring to the paper.
So a question about the funding. How is it happening right now? And for the vendors, you know, how will it work for them? How will they be able to sell?
The vendors agreed to as part of the transition that we're making is that they're paying 5 cents a paper now. So they're going to pay a little bit of money for their papers, but it generates enough money to pay for half of the cost of the vendor coordinator. And those are some of the kinds of ways that we just need to find, you know, in order to fund the paper and keep it going.
But fundraising efforts are definitely going to be underway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're looking for money from foundations. We're looking for money from major donors, you know, regular sustainers. We're creating some larger grants, a three-year grant, as we build the donor base for the paper. But, you know, this is a very active fundraising campaign. We already, in the first 2 months, raised $27,000 for the paper. And so we have the publications costs paid for the next 10 months. And we're just getting started.
That's Sally Heineman, co-founder of the Street Spirit newspaper and executive director of Youth Spirit Artworks. You can find out more about the paper at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The housing of last resort for a lot of people that would otherwise be homeless are SROs, or single-room occupancy hotels. Around 19,000 people in San Francisco live in these dorm-style buildings, though many of them have been demolished over the decades. Today, as part of our week-long series, SRO Stories, we're going to meet Robert Posey, who lives in an SRO in San Francisco's Tenderloin.
My name is Robert Posey, and I have my dog Blueberry with me. She's 3.5 years old, and we live in the Windsor. We've been here for a year and a couple of months. And I pretty much just went to live in the Haight-Ashbury when I was about 15. I guess that was about 1976, 77, somewhere in there. Because I got to know the Rainbow family of Peace and Light and all the hippies, and so we go to Rainbow gatherings, we go to the Grateful Dead shows together, we travel around school buses. And I lived in a school bus right next to the park with some really nice people. So then a little bit time went by, and I got married, and I had two daughters, and my wife got killed in 1996. She got she had decided to go for a walk, and she went to go get a pack of her Benson and Hedges at the corner market. And as she was crossing the street, I guess she looked the wrong way, and the car hit her, killed her. And so basically my whole life changed. And I didn't handle it very well. I started to drink and do drugs, and fell apart, lost everything, lost my job, and then sold the car to pay the rent, couldn't do it. Ended up out in Golden Gate Park for 16 years. I think it was my fourth cancer surgery was the neck here. While I was in the respite care, I told the nurse in there everything that was wrong with me. I said, look, my face is made of plastic and titanium on the right side. I got pins in my neck, pins in my back. I've got a colostomy bag. I've got cancer. And I just started going down this litany of all these things, plus Crohn's disease and epilepsy on top of it all. And he looked at me and he said, you know, you really should be housed. And I said, well, you know, I've been trying. 2 months later, I was here. And my face is cleared up. My health is improving. I'm not bleeding. I haven't had a seizure. I'm adapting to being around other people. It's been a long time since I've had interactions with other people that aren't trying to steal my backpack. Being able to trust other people around me, to, not to think that, you know, they're just trying to be friendly or come and knock on my door just to look and see what I have. I wouldn't even come down to the Tenderloin because I had problems here before. Okay, I am not prejudiced against Black people at all, but I was fearful. I had come down here before and I had, you know, I've been punched and I had been robbed in the past. And in the back of my mind, it was Black against white. And that turned out to be false because most of my friends are Black now. Even though when I was in Golden Gate Park, my best friend was a Black guy, Dwayne. And he had helped me so many times when I was sick in the park. I mean, he's the only one that fed me, brought me food when I was really sick. And that's one of the reasons why I decided, you know, maybe I'll give it a chance. And all that fear was unfounded, ungrounded. It was just false fear. And it's gone. I'm not scared at all anymore. That fear is gone. Everywhere I go here, I meet interesting people that I couldn't believe it. Every misconception that I had, it just proved itself to be false about Tenderloin. It's like, I'll walk outside at 3 o'clock in the morning, go all around the block and say hi to everybody. And nobody's gonna say one bad word.
That piece was produced by Colin Peden in partnership with San Francisco's Department of Supportive Housing. They're putting together a whole exhibition at the public library. Find more information at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's our show for today. The team includes Jürgen Klemm, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Olivia Henry, Jeremy Jew, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, James Rollins, Kerry Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by the Jeffrey Chin Trio. The trio play the Cadillac Hotel in San Francisco's Tenderloin neighborhood Friday afternoon. It's a free show and starts at 12:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.